Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast, Single, Not Stalled, Pursuing Sanctity in Your Singleness. This podcast is for Catholic women who find themselves living the single life, whether it by choice, vocation, or circumstance. Here, we believe that this time is not just a waiting period, but a season rich with purpose, growth, and grace. Join your hosts, Monica and Katie, two sisters navigating the single life from different perspectives as we dive into conversations about faith, friendship, professional growth, and finding joy in the everyday. Let's embrace this extraordinary journey together. Hi, Katie.
Hello. May 1st is the day we're recording this. So May 1st. Welcome, May.
My favorite month.
I mean, your birthday's in this month, so that makes
sense. I'm biased. Well, I also think, at least here in Chicago, May is the first solid month of good weather. Like,
that's true.
We've fully turned the corner. It will not be snowing on us. It's not, the weather's not bipolar anymore. So it's like, it's the month that it all turns, which is amazing.
This is true. Yeah, exactly. I remember being in Chicago in April and it would be like snowing on April 15th. And you're like, what? Wait, we had that one friend who got married. What day did she get married in April? Like end of April, April 25th or something. And it like snowed that day.
Yeah. Like inches. Like she looked like she had a winter wedding.
Yeah. Like literally. And it was, It was an April, end of April wedding. But anyway, yeah, that's true. Is that your joy that we're in May and we're in good weather now?
That is my joy. Well, yes, that the weather has turned. I also realize like my mood is so contingent on, so influenced by, I should say. It's very influenced by the weather. I think that's really the case for so many people. But the more sun consistently is my joy. Like that is, it's good for the soul.
I'm here for that. I, a couple of days ago, started phase one of, it's kind of the Live Hard program, but it's what comes after 75 Hard. I had done 75 Hard ending like just before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then if you're going to keep going for the whole year, there's like different things you can do. And so phase one is next. So it's a 30-day program. And so basically I'm doing it through most of the month of May. And that's kind of my joy because I actually like doing these physical challenges and kind of pushing myself in these ways. And I find that I'm much more consistent with the things that I want to do, like eating well, exercising, reading, those kinds of things. If I'm doing a challenge, then I am. If I just wake up one morning and I'm like, I should do these things. So that's my joy. It's kind of random.
Not random. It's good. It's very you.
Yeah. It is very
me. Two episodes ago, we had a little pause in our typical programming to talk about the Pope. But 2 weeks ago, we were talking a lot about attractiveness, not just in physical appearance, but in, I suppose, the way we conduct ourselves in attracting or pulling in, drawing others to us. So the takeaway there was to kind of either talk to people about how you're coming across or to maybe pivot or adjust. So I'm not sure, Katie, if you tried any of that.
So it's interesting because between recording that and then recording this one, I went to Rome and was chaperoning a group there. And I knew two of the ones that I was chaperoning really well. I had met four of the other ones that I was chaperoning. And then I didn't know at all, met for the first time two others. And so I was thinking a lot about this conversation while I was there. Because obviously as the chaperone, you want to be liked, you want to be respected, etc. And I was also kind of going back and forth with this whole thing of like, I want them to like me as a chaperone. I want to be attractive in that way. But at the same time, I don't want to be so focused on like being liked by them that I'm being inauthentic or I'm just sitting around focusing so much on being liked and I hope they like me and I hope they like me. So for me, it's always an interesting balance, but that was kind of my take on it this past week or 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's very interesting. This is always so interesting to me because I think I've been working on this a lot, right? So there's this, Jordan Harbinger has this podcast episode that talks about introspective unicorns. Just these like people who are so introspective, they're almost like this anomaly that they know, they not only know themselves so well, but they know how they come across to other people and how the world perceives them. And that a lot of people think that they're like this, but they're not. Yeah. A lot of us cannot actually accurately assess maybe how we're coming across or how people perceive stuff. And so the challenge there is to do, I think what they call like a daring dinner, where you go out to eat with someone very close to you and you, who you know loves you, right? That has to be the foundational piece here. They know you well and they love you. And you ask them, what is your least favorite thing about me? Oh, and I have done this numerous times, but it, for me, my personality and temperament, I relish in this.
Yeah. I would and, die.
Well, what's interesting is I actually feel as though it was harder for the people I asked than it was for me.
Oh, sure. Because they, well, especially now in our culture, we don't want to say anything mean, right? You'd rather lie to a friend than tell them their dress looks hideous on them or their new haircut is bad.
I know.
So, yeah.
It was uncomfortable for them, too, to oh gosh, like have to say those things or whatever and blah, blah, blah. And so, but I think that that would be like an interesting challenge because it really does make you reflect like, how am I coming across to others and stuff like that? And I think my feedback often is I think I have resting, bothered face and that I'm intimidating. And so I think I'm working on being much softer. So, okay, what have I taken away in my approach to people and how I come across or how do you be a little bit more attractive? I think the way we position or posture our bodies in a more like kind of open and receptive stance is can be helpful. And just working on lightening and lifting my face, right? Like not just kind of letting it sit in a resting bothered face so that people feel like they can approach a little bit easier.
This is making me think of two things. One, in our family, we have this birthday tradition where you go around and you say what you like best about the birthday person. But I remember our brother one year was like, I don't want you guys to go around and say what you like best about me. I want you to go around and say what I can work on.
So he got everyone was in Harbinger. That's maybe like right he got around. There. Mm-hmm. And it was uncomfortable. I mean, I was like, I'll go first.
Monica was like, I'll go first. But our mom was like, I'm not doing that.
She couldn't.
Like she felt so bad doing that and whatever. And I think she eventually did after all of us started going and whatever. But what I was really impressed by is he took what at least one of the things that I said, because I remember specifically what I said, and I can tell he works on it.
Yeah.
Like I can tell it's something that he has worked to change. Mm-hmm. So that is really impressive. But also to your point of thinking for you, like trying to lighten your face when you're talking to people and stuff, this is also making me think. I was talking to someone once about how when I am going into a new situation, I always kind of think of the situation, think of the audience, and also think of what image I want to portray. And then I decide whether I'm wearing heels or not. Because I'm like, we're all very tall in our family, right? I'm the second shortest at 5'10". Just to give a picture of how tall the hinderers are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you put on 3-inch heels and I'm, you know, practically 6 feet tall. And in certain situations that can come across as powerful and that you know what you're doing. So often if I'm giving a presentation before executives or things like that, especially in a male dominated field, I will wear heels because it's a little bit of a power play. But if I'm going for the first time and I'm trying to talk to people who, you know, might find my size already intimidating, I tend to wear flats and think about it that way.
Yeah. When I was going on job interviews, I always wore flats. When I go on a date, I wear flats. And there are going to be some people, look, everybody has different perspectives on this, but, you know, because some people are going to be like, embrace your height and this and that. And I'm like, I'm already embracing it. Like, I'm already tall. Like, I'm taller than the average man. So we just need to level that for a second. And that, it really is just being considerate about how I'm coming across, right? Like, can I look in the mirror and can I ask myself, like, what message am I trying to send? What message would be received? And I think that's actually more important to think about what is being received, not necessarily what I'm trying to convey. Because often we are attempting to convey a particular message, but what's received is very different. And so we almost have to put ourselves in the other. This is the introspective unicorn, right? That I can put myself in other people's shoes or in the world around me and understand how I'm being received.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those people are crazy. Okay. But we're not talking about that this week.
No.
We decided we're going to talk about You know, when you have to make that decision of whether you're going to pivot in something in your life, maybe it's moving, maybe it's a new job, maybe it's a relationship, maybe it's whatever, right? When you have this difficult decision to make of a pivot, how do you make that decision? How do you go about navigating that? Like, what does that look like, right? And that's what we thought we would talk about today.
This topic is very near and dear to my heart as a therapist because everything I do is about change, right? It's internal change, it's external change, it's you know, embracing change, big ways, small ways, all of these things, and that people are really reluctant to change, really reluctant to change. There's a fear in the unknown, and so I think that truthfully, the fear of the unknown is what holds people back the most. I'd rather stay even in discomfort and mess because I know it than make changes that would be good for my life.
Yeah. It is really interesting. I think too, because we are such creatures of habit, like once we've kind of established a habit, it's really hard to get out of this. Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking this yesterday because part of doing this phase one of 75 hard is doing like 10 minutes of visualization. And I will admit before this, I was like, this is super woo-woo crap. Like I'm not doing this. But the idea is pretty interesting, right? That you kind of like envision your ideal day, you know, now or a year from now, right? To help you kind of understand like what are priorities, right? What things you want to do. And so as I was envisioning yesterday, as I was doing it, my ideal day, I was like, oh, this is interesting. Da-da-da. And when I woke up this morning, I found myself like doing something that wasn't part of that vision for my ideal day, because it's like what I always do. And I thought, oh, this is interesting, right? Like if I just change this one little thing, like I would be that much closer to my kind of ideal day. But it was just it became such second nature to like whatever, right? Like one of the things in my ideal day was like to not reach for my phone at all until after I have like done my morning prayer, gone about my morning routines, like gone for a walk, and then look at my phone. And of course, like I woke up, I got up, I let the dog out, whatever. And then I was like, I'm just going to check a couple things. And then, you know, and as I was looking at my phone, I was like, okay, this is that. Cause it's just so easy to stick with what you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're creatures of habit. I mean, we like, our body likes a level of like homeostasis. We like predictability. We like, we find safety and security and all of these things. And so there really is a mental challenge to kind of hoops to jump through and things to think about as I consider making changes that I have to understand the discomfort is largely because it's unfamiliar, not because it's unsafe or not because it's not the right thing to do. I think that, you know, if anyone is staying stuck or in that space of I kind of considering change, if the reason I choose to stay where I am is fear-based or what we would call like sunk cost, like I've already, like this is research that's done in the business world that people, if they've lost profit or revenue or something, they're more likely to stay. People tend to double down on their mistakes instead of just cut and run. Like as soon as I see the lost cost, I need to go. And most of us stay. We say, but I spent money on this, but I put time into this, but what would other people think? And so because there's a cost that I've put in, I'm less likely to leave. And truthfully, if that's one of the motivators to keep you somewhere, it's not enough. Yeah. It's not good. We need to make the changes moving forward that's best for our lives, not because of choices we made in the past.
Right. Well, and I think too, those who are single have kind of, they're in a unique space in their life, right? Like this, these are the moments when you can make pivots much easier than you can once you're married, once you're, you know, in a committed relationship, those kinds of things. Because you can't just up and move to another state. You can't just necessarily be like, I'm going to quit my job and hopefully find a new one. But when you're single, it's a little easier, right? You're like, nah, whatever. Like, I go work at McDonald's for a couple months while I look for the better job, whatnot. But like, if you're supporting a family or you got to feed the kids, you can't just be like, I'm done, like whatever, right? So you know, this is a unique time in our singleness to really start working at, you know, making those pivots, not just letting ourselves stay in these kind of stagnant patterns, but moving into these growth patterns that we're looking for.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, I mean, we really only have one life to live. And so we can stay in kind of the status quo or in what we think we should be doing, or we can be radical and, right. And really just be brave in making the choices that are best for our lives. And to your point, Katie, in the singleness, like there's a lot of freedom that comes with that. And because you're really only answering to yourself, unless it's vocationally, you're answering to other people, but you really only have one life to live. So why aren't we making moves and changes that really fill our life with abundance and with joy and with these things that maybe we've wanted to do, but we're holding ourselves back, or career changes or moves, or even just hobbies, right? Thinking of how many times are we like, no, I couldn't, I can't do that. And it's like, well, why not? Just try it. Just go for it.
It's true. It's funny. This is making me think, when I was contemplating starting my company, Rosebud Social, back in 2000. So I was like really going through it in 2019, trying to figure out if I was going to, you know, leave Instagram influencing behind. I had a part-time job that was kind of giving me steady income so that I could really do the influencer stuff and not worry about it. And so, you know, I said to our dad, I was like, hey, like, I don't know. I'm going back and forth on this. Like, it's gonna be pricey to start, but not super pricey because it's an online business. So it's not crazy. It's not like I'm buying a building. Anyway, so I'm going through all the pros and cons and whatnot. And my dad was like, okay, so what's the worst that happens? And I was like, I don't have any money. Like, I can't pay my health insurance, right? Like, whatever. And he goes, okay, so then you get a part-time job. He's like, but why wouldn't you? He's like, now is the perfect time to jump in, try something new, give it a go. What's the worst that happens? You have to get a job. And I was like, oh, yes. Okay. And that, like, that simple conversation, which seemed so duh to me, was the thing that made me go, I'm all in. I'm going to do this. Right. Yeah. And I'm so grateful for that, because I would not be where I am today if he hadn't told me just, what's the worst, right? What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah. So we overemphasize the weight of choice and change. And oftentimes I feel as though people, and myself included, look at some of these decisions we make in life as fatal or final. We put so much weight onto a decision, or we make a decision moral when it's not. This is not a moral decision. And so we have to actually like suspend the weight that we put on decisions and recognize that I'm going to make the best decision with the information I have in the moment. And maybe it is reckless and maybe it is daring, but maybe it pays out, right? So if it's not illegal or immoral, go ahead with your bad self. Go for it. Because again, there's only one life to live. What's the worst that happens? Everything is figure outable. Nothing is fatal or final. That's death. But as long as you're not being reckless with that, go ahead. Like, true. Go figure it out.
No, it's true. It's moving it into the technological side. So this past week, I had to make like a pretty difficult business decision. And I've been going back and forth on it for a while, trying to decide like, what's the best course of action? How do I do this? Like, da da da, all these things. And this is a decision that I've been kind of looking at for a couple months now, kind of weighing back and forth. And I will tell you, my gut from the beginning was like, the answer is yes, do this thing. But then I'm much more heart-centered than gut-centered. So then, of course, my heart is like, oh, but like, this could be hard, like, da-da-da-da, whatever, this could hurt these people. Like, what is this going to mean? All these kinds of things. And so going back and forth. And so like this week, I was like, I need to make this decision. Like, we need to go forward one way or the other. And so I did what I'm now going to do all the time. I did a ChatGPT business walk. And so I literally, because sometimes I need to move to like think. So I went out for a walk, and on my ChatGPT, you can talk into it. So you don't have to type. You can just talk, right? Like kind of like talk to text. So I talked into it and I said, like, I have this really difficult business decision to make. You know, here's the scenario, here's what I'm trying to decide, blah, 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 all this stuff. Can you ask me questions to help me think through this decision so I'm making the best decision, you know, for me, for my team, for the company, for our clients, etc.? And so then ChatGPT threw a bunch of questions up. And then I responded to the various questions. It summarized each of my responses and saying, so what I'm hearing now, these are the pros, these are the cons, da da da. They asked some follow-up questions. We went back and forth. And so, and okay, I have trained my algorithm on ChatGPT, so it knows me pretty well. So it comes back and it says, it sounds to me like the decision has already been made in your gut.
Oh.
And you know what it is. Here's how I suggest you move forward. And then it gave me a whole list of things that I had to do in order to move forward with the decision on this, including emails, composed conversations, what? Written out, like the whole deal. I'm not saying make all your decisions through AI, obviously not. However, for me, it was a really helpful tool because it was kind of a third party.
Yeah.
Who could hear the various things that I was saying, pros and cons.
Yeah.
Who could ask questions that people hadn't asked me, who I had already consulted with, because they also had skin in the game.
Right.
And it could, without knowing me personally or hearing intonation, it could hear what the decision already was. And
yeah.
I knew that. And I knew that in my gut, but in my heart, I was having a really hard time with it. And as soon as AI came back and was like, you know this in your gut, I was like, dang.
It's right. Yeah. That is pretty incredible. I think that, you know, as you were talking, I was like, yeah, AI has kind of not replaced, but been an addition to mentors. Like kind of what I'm hearing is like mentorship, right? Or going to someone else who, because, you know, previously it would have been you called another like executive or something and you were like, hey, can I troubleshoot this with you?
Right.
And so really, I think that we can use a lot of these things to our advantage if we're feeling stuck in a particular space in life and we're like, I want to make changes or pivots. Go to people who know you. Go to mentors in those fields or professions or whatever it is, right? Go to AI and walk it through so that you're making the best choices or the most informed choices possible. I don't even want to use best, right? Because that's a little bit of moral language. Yeah. And a lot of this is not, it's just about pivoting. And I think some people also get caught up in the morality of choices and stuff. And I think that ultimately God wants our freedom.
Right.
And so go to this school or go to that school. Date this person or date that person. Like, just choose. Right? Make a choice. And you're going to be able to make the best with that choice. But I think that this is also, I wonder if this is a little bit of a millennial thing or recent. We have this fear of commitment and of making a choice and maybe being stuck. And I kind of want all the options open and available to me. And to come down on a final decision or to make particular changes is really difficult for people today.
But what I think is interesting, so this is funny. We were just actually talking to one of our clients who's trying to fill a program that they have for millennial Gen Zers. And they're having they're having a really hard time filling it because they're having a really hard time with people committing.
Interesting.
To this program. And this is something that we've seen before, even when we had a religious order as part of our clientele, they too were having a hard time having guys commit to joining the order because the new generations like want choice and want options in front of them. But what I think is important to remember is when you step back and just spend time looking at all the options, not making a decision, that in itself is a decision. You have chosen not to make a decision and therefore to stay stagnant, right? To just stay in place as opposed to, I don't know, this might not work, but I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to try this. I don't love my career and I'm going to pivot. And I don't know if the new career is going to work either, but I'm going to try it as opposed to, well, I don't know. I could go this way or that way, or I could stay. So I guess I'll just stay.
Yeah. No choice is a choice.
Yeah.
No choice is a choice. Now we can explore why that is. And that would be a recommendation, right? My recommendation would be if you're struggling to make a change, ask yourself what based questions related to what is making this change difficult. What am I afraid of? What story am I playing out in my head? What is the narrative that I'm telling myself? And when you can kind of separate yourself from the decision-making process, from the emotions behind it, and look at it a little bit more objectively, we can kind of call out maybe some of the misconceptions or maybe some of the lies we're participating in or the fears. And that's going to help move us a little bit out of being stuck in that process. And truthfully, and I mean this in almost every single aspect of life, feelings often follow behaviors. So just do it.
Yeah.
So we have to start before we're ready. You will never be, even the single people discerning marriage, you're never going to be 100% on the person ever. No. There's no way. There's no way. We're not even, I will be so bold to say, I'm not even 100% about my faith, right?
Right. Yeah. Like there's
faith walks with doubt. They walk hand in hand. And we say, I don't really know about that, but I'm going to keep going. I'm going to make decisions in that direction.
And this was just the gospel that we had, right? Thomas, doubting Thomas. And he's like, blessed are those who have not seen and still believe, right? But they're still like, I don't really know, but Thomas, like, he's a saint. And he was like, I don't believe this, right? Like, doubting, hello. Yeah, I think.
Well, he's not, and, we could do a whole episode on this, but, like, Christ doesn't condemn him for that.
No, he's not condemning you.
He's like, what do you need? And I will give that to you. Do you need to put your hand in my side? Come here and do that.
Yeah.
Right? It's God understands that in our humanity, in our limited capacity, we're going to look at things and say, really? I don't know about that. Like, is it not? And he's like, hey, that's all right. I get it. I'm right here with you. And so, you know, sometimes in making decisions, we have to, whatever pressure we're putting on it, take it off and pull the trigger. And this is very much my personality, my temperament. I'm an 8 in the Enneagram. I'm kind of like, burn the bridge. Who cares? You'll pivot. I understand not as many people are excited about that. But, you know, the people who are really successful and happy in life are willing to be bold and make the changes necessary.
Yeah, I think too, you know, these things that we were talking about, right? Like if you're afraid to pivot and you're just sitting here like in this, you know, abyss of uncertainty, right? To take that to a mentor or to take it to ChatGPT and say, I have this really difficult decision to make. I'm feeling really nervous and anxious about it. Can you help me walk through this decision?
Mm-hmm.
And tell it what the decision is, right? Like, we're going to move or, you know, or whatever. I'm thinking of switching careers or I think I need a second job, right? Whatever. And then have it ask you questions or have your mentor ask you questions and work through it that way. I think often, you know, like my decision, like I knew in my gut, but I needed a third party to not be part of my business to be able to tell me this is okay or to walk me through it. And I think often we need that kind of outside voice to help us realize what we already knew or what we already have seen is important or needed.
Well, yeah. And I think in that, you walking through that process reiterates and confirms my gut and my instinct is trustworthy.
Yeah.
And so in the moving forward in the future, you may not need to go to a third party to make a similar decision in the future because that learning process and curve that you went through reinforced stronger roots for you in decision-making process and just all of these things. And so like, was it the right decision? Was it the wrong decision? It doesn't matter. It was the decision that was made and there's growth and learning and opportunity in all decisions that are made. And so if we move more towards an opportunity mindset and a growth mindset, there are no wrong choices,
right?
There are choices that we learn from.
Yeah. And I think that is so important, right? Like seeing these things that maybe you have dubbed as failures in your life, or this fear of failure. If I make this pivot in the career, if I leave what I majored in and go in a different direction, if I whatever, and I might fail, well, okay. Like failure is really good. Like failure got us the airplane and the Ford Model T, the light bulb, like everything. And I, you know, and I look at my own career trajectory and I'm like, geez, I had so many different jobs. I worked so many different places. And you know, at times I was like, oh my gosh, another failed attempt or another failure. Like I thought for sure I wanted to be a teacher and I like moved into teaching and I loved it for the first year, hated it the second year, was okay with it the third year. And then I was like, I got to get out. Like, this is not for me. And then I was like, oh my gosh, what a failure. And I was like, no, but I learned so much those 3 years that I taught that I wouldn't change it for the world. And I think it makes me a better business owner. I think it makes me a better with client facing because I had that opportunity. So, you know, looking at those failures or the potential of failure and thinking this is going to give me opportunities to grow and change no matter what the outcome ends up being.
Right. And I think so many people hold themselves back for fear of what other people are going to think, right? Because why do I care so much about failure? I care about the perception of failure. Mm-hmm. Do I care about the fact that I failed or how it's perceived that I failed? And so, but what I would say to that is the person you spend the most amount of time with is you. When you die, you show up to your judgment alone. We are accountable to ourselves. And so, look, I got to look in the mirror and I got to like me. Okay. Yeah. I have to stay true to me and I have to make my life worthwhile. It's mine. Mm-hmm. Like, and God entrusted you to it. He didn't make you incompetent and incapable where someone else had to be the steward of your life. Right. He entrusted you. So inherently you are good and you know how to do this. And we have to maybe reflect on all of these other things that we're telling ourselves that are holding us back from exercising our capacity, our capability, our autonomy, all of these things in making good choices and making changes in our life that will lead to us ultimately being happy, healthy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, everybody's got an opinion. And especially if, you know, some people are just real happy to share their opinion no matter what. And you have to really take a step back and be like, do I actually need to care about the opinion of so-and-so? Right. And I would argue there's maybe a handful of people in your life whose opinions matter. Right. If you're vocationally single, right, your director, obviously that matters. Right. Your spiritual director. Actually, no matter how you are single, your director is probably going to be really helpful for you. Spiritual director. Maybe a couple of really close people in your family who you really trust and who know you very well, but otherwise their opinion doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it's what God thinks of you and how aligned you are to what God's asking you to do and who he's asking you to be. Mm-hmm. And so how, you know, it's easier said than done to weed that out. I mean, I remember when I was starting Rosebud Social and somebody who, like, I know pretty well, but I wouldn't go to her for business advice, but she came to me and she was like, this sounds like a really dumb idea to be starting right now. And I was like, and I didn't know how to answer. And she's like, I mean, have you seen the market? Like, we're in the middle of COVID. And I said, yeah. And I, you know, and it's funny because intellectually I could look at that and be like, you don't work in this profession. You don't know anything about what I do. Like your advice means nothing, but it still hurt. It still weighed on me for a couple of weeks. Cause I was like, oh my gosh, am I making a bad decision? Like, is this not going to work in this market? Like da, da, da. And then I was like, wait a second. This is one person whose advice I've never gone to for anything, who just happened to tell me her opinion on this. So it doesn't matter. I don't care. I'm going forward.
It's okay to make bad decisions because here's the thing. Bad is a moral word that we're using in a situation that has no morality to it. Start the business or don't. Where's the morality here? So it's a decision. And sometimes I think we need to change the language that we use to alleviate some of the pressure. And that, sometimes we are going to have to kind of walk ourselves through the negativity that is received. But there will always be naysayers. Always. Someone's always going to have an issue with something that you're doing. You might as well be the one in control of what they're saying. Right. Yeah. Like, okay, fine. Like I'm making the choices. I know what you're going to say about it and that's okay. Right. Everyone is free to have their own opinions.
Right.
Right.
So
I think maybe a takeaway for this week would be to think about what are the beliefs I hold or the feelings that hold me back from making change.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be maybe beliefs we hold. It's going to be expectations we experience. It's going to be maybe we're people pleasers and I'm worried about hurting people or what people would say, so forth. So what are those limiting beliefs that are holding you back from making changes? And it doesn't even have to be big. Like I will say personally, I decided recently to take voice lessons.
Right.
And one of the limiting beliefs that I held in that process was, it's too late. This is something you do when you're young. I'm too old. What would people think? That's kind of ridiculous. And then I was thinking, like, no, this is something I've always wanted to do. It doesn't matter if other people think it's a good use of my time or money. And it's, and truthfully, I want to is a good enough reason to do something. You don't have to be good at it. It doesn't have to be that big. And you just can just pull the trigger. So I think maybe for our listeners,
not immoral or illegal, you know, go for it. Do it.
Go ahead with your bad self. So, you know, maybe for our listeners to kind of think about, what are these limiting beliefs that I hold in regards to implementing change?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if you don't want to do that, another thing you could do is if you are in this, like, I need to pivot moment, to either book a time to meet with your mentor, download ChatGPT, whatever, and like move it forward, right? Like stop hemming and hawing and just be like, okay, I'm doing this. Like I'm going to move forward. We're going to make a decision, the best possible decision I can, you know, based on the knowledge and information I have right now. Right.
Yeah.
And do that, I think, but like, don't wait on it. Just
jump in
and do it.
Beautiful.
As Nike says, just do it. That's it for this week on Single Not Stalled. We hope this episode gave you new insights and a renewed sense of purpose in your daily life. Wherever you are on your journey, remember that God is with you and this season is filled with opportunities to grow, flourish, and make an impact. If you're loving the podcast, please take a moment to rate and review it. It helps more women like you find this community. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Join us on social media. We'd love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Until next time, keep living fully and walking boldly.